What's going on here? Okay. So the Baal Tanya began the Sefer by telling us that a person needs to take an oath that they're going to be a Rasha. And even if everybody tells you you're a Tzaddik, don't believe him. So the Baal Tanya asked the obvious question. First of all, that there's contradictions. The Mishnah says that you've got to be a person should never look at themselves as a Rasha. What's more, practically speaking, if a person sees themselves as a Rasha, they're going to be lacking joy in their service of God. What's the point? So he goes on to explain that throughout the words of Chazal, we find five groupings of people. Okay? Those five groupings are Tzadik V'Toivle, Tzadik V'Ra'le, Rasha V'Toivle, Rasha V'Ra'le, and the Magic Beinoni. So, he went on to say, and this is the Baal Tanya's opinion in this matter. It is utilized in other Svarim as well, but one has to be very careful not to cross-reference terminology. So when the Noam HaMelech talks about a tzaddik very often, he's not necessarily talking about the Baal Tanya's definition of a tzaddik. The Baal Tanya's definition of a tzaddik is very absolute. Okay, it means virtually a person who was born a tzaddik, never has an evil desire, never, God forbid, sinned. And then you understand why he goes on to say later on the Amud Beis here that there's one in a generation. Because this is not that common of an occurrence. He also goes on to explain that this tzaddik is a necessity. There's got to be one in every generation. The world has to have one to keep the world going. But tzaddik yisayid olam, we discussed last week the fact that those tzaddikim don't come down for themselves. They're not here for themselves. They are here for the benefit of the generation. And there are various examples given throughout the ages as who that tzaddik might be. Of course, every Talmud expects that their Rebbe is that tzaddik, and I have opinions about that, because I think it makes for a very impractical Rebbe-Talmud relationship. Any Talmud who has a Rebbe, who is a born tzaddik and never struggled with his Yetzirah, is, as far as I'm concerned, a pretty useless Rebbe. He's good for davening for people, but as far as using as an example, what value do we have out of somebody who never, who never battled desire? It's that there seems to be very little practical learning, inspiration, perhaps. Anyhow, went through that explanation, and finally, he concluded with this idea about this absolute nature of tzaddikim, and that these tzaddikim are born that way. They're total tzaddikim, but that's not who we're talking about. We're talking about a Beinoni, and he's going to go on to explain who the Beinoni is. Now, we are on what's here is page 10 in the Jewish pages. It's Hey Amud Beis, okay, right in the middle of the first chapter. Ach Bira Inyan, we're going to go back to the two dots. The explanation is as follows. Al Pi Masha Kosav Reb Chaim Vital, B'Shar HaKedusha, Reb Chaim Vital writes in his Gates of Kedusha, do they call Ish Yisrael, every Jew, Echad Tzadik V'Echad Rasha, I don't care who he is, most righteous, and God forbid the most wicked Jew, Yesh Shtei Neshamis. We are a dual soul bearing people. Dichsev Neshamis Ani Asisi, plural, I made Neshamis. They are Shtei Nefashis. Notice the interchangeability of the terms Neshamis and Nefashis. Souls, drives. Nefesh Achas Mitzada Klipa V'Sitra Achra. One Nefesh is from the vantage point. Thank you. Shtei nefashos, nefesh echad mitzad haklipa v'sitra achra, we discussed this a little bit last week. One soul comes from what's called the other side, and the klipa is the shell. V'hi, and obviously we're going to talk much more about this, v'hi amislabeshes bidam ha'odam, and it is the life source that is contained in the blood, la'achis haguf, to physically give life to the body. Like the pasuk says, ki nefesh habasa bedami, the soul is in the blood. That's the nefesh habehami, the physical soul. Now, just to pause here for a moment, we need to recognize that while we'd imagine that the godly soul is very exalted and very holy, it is not the goal of creation. It is not the goal of the human being. The goal of the human being is this soul, is the nefesh habehami. The purpose of life is not for the godly soul, because as we will soon see, the godly soul basks and lives in the shelter of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it needs nothing. It's not missing anything, and it needs nothing. The perfection of the animal soul is the goal of life, and here's the magnificent thing that the Sefer Mikubalim talk about, and the Baal Tanya talks about much more in Likutei Torah than he does here in Sefer Tanya, and that is that the source of the Nefesh HaBahami, way upstairs, and we're going to get to the whole source issue today, is from a higher source than is the godly soul. The Nefesh HaBahami comes from what's called Olam HaToyu. The Nefesh HaLiki comes from Olam HaTikun. So, the klal is, we did this in physics, especially when we took the great courses in physics and Babov. The higher you start with something, when it falls much lower, right? As a result, the Nefesh HaBahami, because of its higher source, when it falls, it creates monsters, it creates much lower appetites, right?
Compared to what?
Compared to the godly soul that comes from a lower place. So, but once it is elevated and propelled higher, it takes the Nefesh HaLiki to places that it could not have gone on its own. That's the goal. The goal is to take the Nefesh HaBahami that comes from a much more exalted, higher place, use it as a propeller to propel the godly soul to a higher place that it could not have gone to on its own. We'll get to much more of this, but we got to realize the point is the goal of life is not the godly soul. The godly soul is perfect. It needs no rectification. It needs nothing. The goal is the animal soul. The animal soul becomes a propeller for the godly soul to lift it up to this level of Olam HaTayyum.
It's corruptible.
Then
Nefesh
HaBahami is, as we'll see right now. Umimena, and it is from the animal soul, Bo'ois that come, call Hamidois Rois, all terrible character traits, Me Arba Yisoidois Roim Sheba, from the four elements, its building blocks. What are the four Yisoidis? We know everything in the world is made up of fire and water and air and earth. Now, we need to pause here because there seems to be something very strange going on here. We're talking about a soul. How is a soul, which you can't even see, how do you explain that a soul is made up of fire and water and earth and air? Doesn't make sense. Do you want to tell me that about this table? So I could hear that you could argue that the table is made up of four elements. How could you say that about a soul, about a spiritual thing? Now, this explanation that I'm going to give you now, that I'll share with you now, I heard once, I mean, it's brought in many Sefer Kodesh in many different ways, but this particular example I heard from my father once, and it is a phenomenally useful yusoid in understanding any spiritual quality, any explanation and any Kabbalistic work that you're going to hear about anything spiritual. Okay? And that is that everything in this physical world is a manifestation of something that comes from a much deeper and higher place. If you will, we could use terms like it is a mashal. It's a parable. So you can use anything here to understand that in its pure spiritual form, it doesn't have the trappings that it has here. Now, why is this yisoid important? So let's first deal with it on a Torah level. Okay? The Gemara says, Asher misha bolikan v'talmudei biyodei. Fortunate is the person who comes upstairs after 120 years and has his Gemara in his hand. Doesn't mean in his hand, because he doesn't have anything in his hand. It means he comes having studied Torah. So all the Svarim HaKadoshim ask, so are you going to tell me that upstairs in Gan Eden, they're learning the halachas of Shor Shenogach HaSapara? Is that what they learn about? Our ox gores a cow? What's the halacha? Is that what we're talking about in the spiritual world of Gan Eden? Are they talking about how many inches away you got to plant the grapes from the wheat? All the laws of Zeroim? Or the laws of marriage and divorce? Is that what goes on in upstairs in the celestial Mesifta de Rikia? Say this Rav Magdashim, that the Rebbeinu Shalom in his infinite wisdom created an infinite Torah. That's what happens when you have infinite wisdom. We are very limited beings. We have something called IQs, hopefully. And due to the fact that we are limited, we cannot comprehend infinity. So how are we ever going to grasp awesome, sublime, lofty thoughts? So the Rebbeinu Shalom created something called a mashal and a nimshal, a parable and a lesson. You want to teach a kid in kindergarten fractions. You bring in a pie, and you cut up the pie into four pieces. And you teach the kid that each piece of pie is a quarter. 1/4. Now, if you then go into advanced math class in calculus, and anybody pulls out a pie, you know that you're in trouble. Why? Because the kid is stuck in the pie. He never got it. He never got the nimshal. He's stuck in the mushal. The goal is to take the mushal and realize that the pie needs to be developed into much more, what we call in Yiddish, edale, you say, much finer concepts that take a much deeper mind to grasp. The Gemara says about Shlomo HaMelech, that Shlomo HaMelech knew 3,000 Mishalim for every detail in Torah. What does that mean? That means that he understood every concept in Torah on 3,000 levels. Now, how many levels are there? There's an infinite number of levels. But Shlomo HaMelech was so wise that when he learned Shor Shenogach HaSapara, the fact that what the halachas are, when the ox gores the cow, he didn't accept it at face value. He first learned the halacha the way it is, and then he understood it on a deeper level, and then he understood that that deeper level was only a mashal for a level beyond that, and he kept on going and going and going until he came to the most awesome, sublime secrets of Seydus HaTorah, of the depth, the true depth of Torah. That's what Eilam Abba is. If we learn the mashal here, we learn the parable here, then when we come upstairs, we can say, I'm coming with my pie, so I can grasp fractions. But if we come without having learned the mashal, then we have no way of grasping the lesson, of grasping the nimshal upstairs. Fortunate is the person who, while they're learning the revealed aspects of Torah, get a glimpse into the deeper levels of Torah, even while they're here. And that was Shlomo HaMelech, right? Shlomo HaMelech learned it first, understood the sugya, learned it with the Rishonim, or I'm sure Shlomo HaMelech had a Pnei Yeshua, and whatever else he had there. And then he went beyond that and understood it on much deeper levels of Torah. The person who, God forbid, claims that all there is in the Mishnah and in the Gemara is the revealed level is an apikaris. He's denying what it's about, right? He's denying what it's all about upstairs. Now, let's give you a mashal for something in physical terms. We had a person who came once, and they were very busy with, is God a man or a woman? So what they decided they were going to do is they switched off every Friday night with Kiddush, and they had one Friday night, God was a man. They said it, but Lashon Zachar. And one Friday night they said it Belashon Nekeva. So my father said, he said, that's great. When you go into the plumbing department in Home Depot, so instead of asking for the male parts and the female parts, you should switch them every week. Despite what you want. And you should ask for the female parts for the male parts and the male parts for the female parts, because it's the exact same Yeshay. What does that mean? When human beings were created, so the Rebbeinu Shleim borrowed terms from a much deeper, higher, truer reality, which is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a mashpia. He is the ultimate giver. Okay? And that creates the concept of Zohar. Then there's a concept of the Shechina, which is a Mekabel, which is receives from God. And that's B'loshon Nekeva. So when God then went on to create human beings and animals and so on, and one of them in some way mirrored a higher concept of Zohar, so Rebbeinu Shleim said, I'm going to borrow the term from on high and attribute to this person the male concept, just like we do with the pipe. We call it a male pipe because it protrudes. On the other hand, just like, and nobody's going to walk in and look at the pipe and say, boy, that's a man. It's a borrowed term. So too, when the Rebbeinu Shleim created a nekeva, he used the term nekeva because just like the Shechina receives, this being is a receiver. To go ahead and then distort the original source based upon the pie, based upon the plumbing parts, is a total ignorance of the truth of the concepts of Zohar Nekeva. For human beings, they are only borrowed terms from something that's going on high. And as a result, we call one B'loshon Zohar, one B'loshon Nekeva, not because God is either a man or a woman. He's neither one. He is a mashpia. He's a giver. And as a result, we utilize that term. That becomes critical to understand. Because when we look at fire in this world, that fire is a mashal. It's a parable to a godly, spiritual fire. It's similar. And as a result, the Rebbeinu Shleim said, ooh, that should be called Eish. Because it resembles a concept above, which is Eish. And the same with fire and with water and with everything else that exists in this world. It is only a manifestation of something deeper and higher that's going on in a true celestial sense. And everything in this world is only a mashal, a borrowed term for those concepts. So when you look at a neshama, if you put it under the microscope, you're not going to find any earth, and you're not going to find any fire, and you're not going to find any air, and you're not going to find any water. But it's made up of the true essence of those things, just like the fire and the water here in this world are borrowed terms. The neshama is created out of the stuff for which those things are named. I'll give you one other example. We say in Shachris on Shabbos that the Rebbeinu Shalom is Moitzi Chama Mim Kaima Ulevona Mim Chayin Shifta, that he opens up the gates of heaven, pulls the sun out, and he shines on the world. Now, I don't know, again, if any of you have ever studied the function of the sun, but the sun doesn't come out of any windows in the sky. In fact, the Gemara tells us that there was a machlekes between the Chachmi Yisrael and the Chachmi Umas Olam, between the wise men of Israel and the wise men of the world. Where does the sun go at night? And the wise men of Israel said that it goes on the other side of the firmament, on the other side of the sky. And the wise men of the world, Adom HaSalem, said it goes under the earth. Comes Rav and says that the wise men of the Umas HaOlam won the argument. Because you see that the springs get hotter at night. So clearly it's because the sun is going under the earth and warming up the springs. Rabbi Kiva Eger on the daf says that the Shita Mikubetza says that Rav is only saying that because their proof was better, but the Chachm Yisrael are correct. The sun does not go into the earth at night. The sun goes on the other side of the firmament, on the other side of the sky. Now again, anybody who's ever gone to Babov, to the schools of astronomy, the special course we had there, please mute your phones, guys, please mute your phones, knows that the sun goes under the earth. So what's going on here? So there's a sefer from, hello, gentlemen, please mute your phones. The Radal was Rav in Vilna. So Misnagid. Close your tanyas for a moment. So the Radal says that what's going on here? So the Chnish Tazai. See, he says this very aside. What happens physically in this world is of no consequence to truth. It's a mashal. In the world above, the Ribbono Shel Olam is taking a chama, a spiritual sun, out of a rekia, and allowing it to shine on the earth. How it displays itself here in this world physically, whether it goes physically under the Kadar Aretz or not, is of no consequence. So when we speak Shabbos and davening, we're talking about a world of truth. And in that world of truth, the Ribbono Shel Olam takes the sun out of its makom, he opens up a window, and he shines it on the earth. That's not how it is physically. How it displays itself physically is of little consequence to us. Here we got to deal with that. But in the Olam HaEmes, that's how it operates. That's how the Ribbono Shel Olam operates the world. So again, you have a distinction between a world of truth and a manifestation in the physical world. Now let's learn, now that we have that inside, take a look at how this displays itself with the four qualities that make up the physical soul. You notice by heart, Mayor? I have copies here on the desk.
Does that work vice versa when we do physical world effects?
Oh yeah, we're going to get to that.
So therefore, that's kind of an oxymoron.
No, well, it is and it's not, because what Gavi is asking here is, what about what we do physically? How does that affect the higher world? The Kedushas Levi is full of the power that a Jew has and how our actions reverberate throughout the Olamos Elyonim, that every thought and every movement and every word has awesome effects. But it's true in both ways, because we're not really only living in a physical world. Part of what we're discussing here is that due to the fact that we're Jews, we're living in more than one world at a time. That's why we're always so schizophrenic. Because we're never really in one place. Take a look. Four lines from the bottom. Umimenabois kolamidis rois, ma'arbi yisoidis ro'im shaba. From it, from the nefesh abahami, come all the bad character traits that stem from the four elements of creation. Dahainu, that is to say, kas v'gaiva, anger and arrogance, miyisoida esh, come from the character trait of fire, the yisoid, not the character trait, the element of fire. Shenegba lemaila, those two things, fire always yearns upwards, and that's what arrogance and anger are. Taivas hatanugim, Reb Chaim Vital writes there, he's continuing to quote Reb Chaim Vital, the love of pleasure, miyisoid amayim, stems from the element of water, ki amayim atzmichim kol min hatanug, because water causes all forms of pleasure to grow. V'hoilulus v'litzonis v'hispa'aris, and mockery and lightness and pride. All of these are forms of speech that he's referring to here. Udvarim b'teilim and stam nonsense, mi'yisoid ruach, those come from the attribute of air, the character, the element of air, va'atzlus va'atzvus, and laziness and depression, miyasoy da'afar, come from the element of earth. And all of these things are intuitively understood. Now, what's interesting is that we also understand that this makes up the difference between people. our character traits that stem from these elements have to do with how God mixed us. So some of us are blessed with a little bit more fire than others, and those are people who are constantly flying off the handle, or people who are struggle tremendously with arrogance. People who have a lot of water, who have a lot of mayim in their mixture, are constantly chasing after pleasure. People who have too much earth never get out of bed and are constantly depressed, and so on. This makes up the difference between people, is how much of each element the Ribbono Shel Olam mixed into the person. However, it's not just the negative, but v'gam midas tovus shebeteva kol Yisrael b'toldosam, even the good quality traits that are in the nature of every Jew, b'toldosam, he adds, in their natural form, k'moy, like Chazal tell us, rachmanus, pity, v'gemilas chasodim, and the drive to want to do acts of kindness, bois mimeno, those are unbelievable what he says here. Those are physical qualities. They are part and parcel of the animal soul. Those drives to be kind and to do acts of kindness, you find among the most secular people who have no religious drive whatsoever. Ki bi Yisrael nefesh zu deklipa humiklipas noiga, because among Jews, the animal soul is not evil. It is pariv. It's made from this middle ground klipa called noiga. It's got some good in it. This is from the secret of the Eitz Hadas, which is mixed up together with both good and evil. As a result, it has on one side these four elements that drag us down to their negative qualities. And we'll soon see that these can be used for the positive as well. There are times when we use arrogance and pride to say, well, you're not going to get me down. I'm a Jew, and I'm on a mission to do mitzvahs. And when we're talking about pleasure, a Jew can derive tremendous pleasure from a geshmak ha-tosfos. There are all kinds of, and from a geshmak ha-mitzvah. And the same, too, with speech. We all know that there are tremendous forms of positive Jewish speech. So they don't have to be negative. That's why it is miklipas noiga. It's from a place which is mixed with of good and evil.
This is so self-encompassing. Why do we need a godly soul?
Wait, we got that. We need to understand that this quality of the animal soul is shared, is similar between Jews and non-Jews. But there is a qualitative difference between the soul that he just discussed of the Jew that naturally is inclined to do acts of kindness and to have pity, but the nefesh habahami of non-Jews, hein mishar klipas tameis, they come from the other three forms of klipa, she'ein b'em toiv klal, that inherently have no good at all in them, k'mer sh'ksiv be'etz chayim sh'amem tes per gimel, as Chazal quote, V'chol tivu da'avdin umas avdi gedulim, all good that are done by nations that are idolaters, legarmayu avdin, they do only for their own good. U'gedi'isa v'gemar al-pi al-posik v'chesed l'umim chatas, the kindnesses of the nations is a sin. Shekol tzedaka v'chesed, what do you do with the fact that we find tremendous kindness and charity going on, sh'umas avdi gedulim, isn't that non-Jews do? Einan el lisyar, they only do it to create, to be able to pride themselves and brag about it. Now, this is obviously a very controversial statement, and this is not so popular. In case the Tanya was going to become a popular book for the masses, he killed it right in the first chapter, because this is so politically incorrect. How can you go say that non-Jews have nothing good to offer the world? So there are two critical issues that need to be explained. Number one is that there is the Rambam speaks specifically, this is one of the most unique things about Judaism Bechlau, is we don't have a monopoly in Olam Haba. The Rambam clearly says that a non-Jew who observes the seven Noahite laws and does so because God commanded them, is mechaside umes ha'olam, he is from the righteous of the nations of the world, V'yesh lechelik lo'ilam haba, and he has a portion in the world to come. Yeah. The Rambam quotes la halacha. Now, so, first and foremost, there are those among the Mekubalim who make a division that those people's souls are qualitatively different. That their souls also come from Klipas Noga, they come from this Pariv Klipa, not from the evil Klipas. That's one way of understanding this. So that there is a category of Chassidei Umas Olam, and they don't fall into this category. But I think that the answer is much more simple than that. And it's kind on one hand, and it's harsh on the other. And that means that when a Jew does chesed, we can't take that much credit for it. Because it's natural to us. For sure it's natural to the godly soul. But what he's saying here is that it's even natural to the animal soul. And because it's part of our nature, we don't get that much credit for it. What he's saying here is that a non-Jew who overcomes their nature to do chesed, he's not saying it doesn't exist, but it takes that much more for them to become a Baal Chesed, because it's not part of their being, it's not part of their essence. So the emes, if you look at it in that light, they get much more credit for the chesed that they do, if it's true chesed, because for us it's literally second nature. Whereas for the non-Jew, it takes that much more for them to be able to motivate themselves to do that kind of chesed. But there's no question that both statements are true, that there is a category of non-Jew who is mechsidei umas olam, and they can work themselves into a place where their nefesh habahami gets them a portion in the world to come. Let's just start the next perek so that we have an idea where we're heading. Perek Beis. The nefesh hasheinis b'Yisrael. So this is what we introduce, the first soul, which is a nefesh habahami, which is an animal soul. But the second nefesh of the Jew, who chelik elikai mimal mamish, unbelievable, incredible words, is a portion of God above, literally, kimayshiksev, like the pasuk writes in Bereishis, v'yipach ba'ap of nishmas chayim, and the Almighty blew into his nostrils a living soul. And as we say in the bracha in the morning, and elikai neshama va'ato nefachta bi, we say it every morning, and you blew it into me. Comes the, he quotes here a Zohar, it's actually not a Zohar, it's a Sefer Akana, which preceded the Zohar, and says, man de nofach mitoiche nofach, that when somebody blows, blowing is different than speech. When somebody blows, if you blow shofar, you blow for any extended period of time, you're going to get wiped out. You ever blow a balloon, or too many balloons, you get lightheaded. And yet, you can talk forever, and you're not going to get it that tired. What's the chiluk? Because blowing, when you blow, you're blowing from a much deeper place than when you speak. Man de nofach, when the Torah uses the word nofach, mitoche nofach, it comes from deep within a person. Pirish mitoche yusai umipnimi yusai, it comes from the depth and from the inner place of a person. Shetoche yisu pnimius hachiyu sheba adam, it is the inner, deepest place within a person, that's what he is moitzi benefichos habikach, when he blows with strength. So if the pasuk says that Hashem blew into us a nishmas chayim, kaviyoch, we need to understand the pasuk is trying to tell us that what is energizing the godly soul within the man, within the human being, is an extraordinarily powerful godly force. Ah! That's the obvious question. Who did God blow in the Shem into?
The
Marishan.
No, what you just said before.
The Marishan wasn't Jewish. So how are you making a chiluk that only a Jew has a neshama, only a chiluk of the kai?
No, we didn't say. We said the good nefesh abahami. We said
no. He says he said before that only a Jew has the godly soul.
I thought it was the klipa noiga.
Did call Ish Yisrael Yeshtei Neshames? Only a Jew. So that kash is asked by all the commentaries. Kash is asked on Reb Chaim Vital. It's not asked in the Baal Tanya. And the answer is that there was a division that was made in humanity itself at Mount Torah. As the Pasuk, the Gemara tells us, Atem Kruyim Adam. We ran off with the name Adam. They lost that title. They're called there. There's other names that non-Jews, other human names that non-Jews are called. But Adam ultimately becomes a Jewish term for a person who is the bearer of both a Nefesh HaBahami and Nefesh HaLiki. So we will take this up from here, Mitzvah Shem, next week Wednesday at 8 p.m.